Hey, everybody. Welcome to Pittsburgh Comic Podcast 33.2. Since we had a little dry run because I forgot to hit start on the recorder. So this is our big year-end extravaganza, and we may have a special guest calling in. So Matt can't speak because he's going crazy. He's excited.
Extravaganza!
But we're just going to go over. We'll probably do a little quicker now since we already did dry run. Through some of the favorites. I posted them on the website, but we'll go over favorite issues, titles, new stuff, things we don't like. And we'll get it started off. We'd start it off with the favorite single issue of the year, the one that sticks out in our minds. And
I already did that.
Yeah, I know. We all already did that. Thank you, Joe. We can just do a quick recap if you like. Let's see. Nick, we'll let you go first.
Oh, thank you. I get to be the first person that gets this one because I think it's a lot of people's, and that's Flashpoint's Batman Night of Vengeance number 2. It's a Batman story that you've never read before, and after 70-some years of Batman stories, that's probably saying something. What makes this stand out amongst all Flashpoint books and really any event books is that it was a miniseries tied to an event that I actually wanted to read more of. I don't really have that many, you know, other ones I could put in that category that it didn't feel mandatory or exploitative. It felt like something that was a window into a larger tapestry of an amazing story. Azzarello and Risso, when they're on, and they really know how to, you know, create a murky world of, you know, dark and despair. And the reason I think this is such an amazing book is it made me really think that there's something worse than a child watching his parents die, a la Bruce Wayne and Thomas and Martha, and that's parents watching a child die. And the psychosis of that is it even outstrips the psychosis of a child watching his parents die because they just weren't prepared for that. And the reveal in 2, and again, spoiler, 6 months doesn't really count. Martha Wayne being the Joker is worse than her dying because the responsibility of this even more tragic Batman of Thomas Wayne just made for a story that if they had, and I bet you they will, other miniseries is in this world, I'm game.
Yeah, I remember after reading that first issue going, wait a minute, Thomas Wayne's Batman, then you get to the end of that second one and you're just, wait a minute, just all the rules were broken at that point.
So, Nick, you don't want any more Fear Itself, Fearsome Four, or Frightful
Four?
You
know, I'm good. I'm good. You know, I don't even like Fear Itself, I'm still reading, but whatever. It's one of those things where it felt like what the best British television shows do, and that ended on top. You know, that there's more they could have told. That there's a larger story. It comes in on a window, and it leaves you wanting more. And that's a mark of a good story.
Okay, Matt.
Matt Lytle, since we forgot our introductions on take two here. The Boys 59, The Death of Terror, who was pretty emotional, especially given what you learn about how he got Terror in the miniseries and what Terror has meant to Butcher, and just the way he died, and
we don't really even know how he died.
No, but the way you saw it, just mm-hmm. And then the way he got the revenge was pretty awesome. Just, so
who is Terror?
Terror's his the dog.
There was just always kind of a threat. He's a bulldog that would, you know, just attack at will, but also was always sitting there happy as could be.
Couldn't remember the bulldog's name.
Yeah, and then you just he walks in, the dog just laying there dead in blood, and you're just like, I don't like, because his wife dies in the miniseries. I don't know which one hit me harder. Like, the wife.
Yeah. Well, you knew the wife died from the very beginning. You knew the wife was going to die. That was his.
But you don't know.
Beginning tale.
Like, I don't know which one was more of a, you know, whatever, emotional moment. So,
Sean.
Mine is Animal Man number 1. Not anything bad I can say about this issue. It was, for someone like me who had never really read anything Animal Man before, it was the perfect introduction. Got me hooked on the book, and the book has not stopped since.
Which was neat, because that was in one of the 52, new 52s that he kind of looked at going, Animal Man? People are demanding an Animal Man book? And you looked at Lemire going, okay, I can see that. I didn't know the artist, although the cover for number one was creepy. I think that's fair. And so then you read it and you just went, wow. I mean, I remember Animal Man from 52 being kind of the weird outer space guy. Didn't make sense. And I never read the Death of Animal Man mini, so I didn't know a lot about the
character.
That
wouldn't have helped you at all.
I think I read the first trade of Morrison's run, and
that was even before it kind of broke the fourth wall and did all the stuff that it's known for.
Yeah. So I think he did an amazing job with that.
Yeah, I was I read the Morrison stuff, and for me, that it raised the bar so high that my expectations weren't that high. And I was so surprised that this went in a different direction that the Morrison did, but at the same point, it's so engaging.
Yeah, and it's neat how I like how it and Swamp Thing right now are basically telling the same story from two different sides, and clearly you're gonna meet up. And I'm
what, a crossover?
That's actually that mm-hmm. tying in. That's later on in our list, but that's coming up for me. Go, Joe.
No, this is Joe F. The
20-year comic veteran.
21-year comic.
21-year-old
comic veteran. Been collecting so long that my books can legally drink.
Wow.
I'm going to ride Matt's coattails a little bit and talk about another book about a dog. My number one issue of the year was Action 713, which followed Crypto. It was a book that was heavy on plot, light on dialogue. Was that Superman?
Yeah,
My mistake. Anyway, still my favorite. It was a great epilogue to Infinite Crisis that I was thrilled that they pushed out before the new 52 came through. Adam, you want to go with yours?
I don't even remember.
It was
Spidey. 655. Marlo Damison.
Yes. Come on.
57.
Sad that we all know what's going on.
It's like, well, you're like a mind reader. I don't know. My favorite book of the year was Amazing Spider-Man 655. That's the Death of Marla Jameson issue. I just really enjoy the art in that book and the story, even if it's, you know, it is a silent issue because there's hardly any dialogue in that whole book. But the whole book is just a really, really good good story altogether. But other than that, that's all I really...
And I think the follow-up, the funeral issue, was really mm-hmm. good, too. I said earlier about Fantastic Four.
Well, actually,
funeral was good.
I got
that
wrong.
Was good, too.
It is the funeral issue.
Okay, the funeral issue was fantastic.
655 is the funeral issue, yeah. And, yeah, I got those confused.
That was the white cover where
Spider-Man's
kneeling.
Yeah, and the cover
kneeling.
Of the book is just, I think it's going to be one of those iconic, either Spider-Man covers or comic book covers in the future. Because, you know, it was a really cool cover.
Justin.
Justin Pinto. All my answers will have a common theme for the most part. My favorite issue after
Superboy
Night of Vengeance was taken was Batman number 2 of the relaunch. And I had said how issue 1 was good. It was really solid. I mean, but there were so many issues like that. But then when you read Batman number 2, the story really started to open up. The history started to come out. And I think that's what I find so interesting about the book is you're reading something that is all basic. I mean, basically brand new. There's slight hints at things in the past, but it's all brand new story. But it seems so dense and so full of information and so full of history. It is quickly jumped to the top of to the pile every week.
Cool. Sean, you still there?
He put a Spider-Man on a chair.
Yes, I'm here.
Okay.
Spider-Man is just for Nick, so he has a visual.
Oh, okay.
But since this is a retake, I'm actually going to go. I'm going to go off board.
Changing your answer.
What?
Changing my answer. I can't. Daredevil, the new Daredevil number 1.
Steal it.
How did I steal it? No one else used it the first time around. So
really? Okay.
No, I thought it was a really clean take. I love the way they use the art to depict the radar to give you a feeling of how the radar works.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that was really unique, and I think also for me that the book has remained consistent. A lot of times when Marvel relaunches like this, you get like 1, 2, 3 solid issues, and then it starts that inevitable petering out. And I'm still really liking the Daredevil book.
Sorry. Yeah, no.
Yeah, you're right. Nobody picked it before. I just realized that, and it's shocking.
Well, yeah.
So I went not stepping on anybody's toes.
No, not at all. Yeah, I picked one. I mean, that was up there, but like when I thought about a single issue, it was Batman and Robin 26 just really stuck out for me. Only because
the other thing I kind of liked about the Daredevil number one was the Mark Waid audio version that Marvel put up online too, as an experiment for deaf readers. So again, I thought that was I didn't think it succeeded, but I liked the idea.
Cool.
So they put an audio up for deaf readers? That's good.
Yeah, and it's on Marvel.com.
Not too many deaf people reading comics. Yeah. Oh, you mean blind readers, yes.
Oh, there's blind readers, sorry. Jeez. Yeah. I gave you another chance.
Okay. Well,
I'm a little in the green, but that's okay.
That's okay. It was your birthday recently, so you're allowed.
And I'm still recovering.
Okay. But, yeah, going back, my favorite was Batman and Robin 26. I couldn't tell you right now who wrote it or
David
who
Hine.
Drew it. David Hine? Okay. But it was a great done-in-one issue for me. I remember it had the Chris Burnham cover, which was very interesting with the Louvre and the Eiffel Tower and all sorts of weird stuff going on. And the book was neat because it introduced a bunch of villains that I want to see more of, which is rare. And I just really liked what happened in the book. There, a lot of artistic things, like Batman... Oh, there was something, some mind control thing, but all of a sudden he thought he was cut in half and the guy actually drew it and it worked. And there was a lot of stuff going on in it that was just really neat. And it was odd because it was the last issue of the run before the relaunch. And I think a couple things were merged into one, but it worked. And I really enjoyed it. It was a book I just read just as an afterthought, but it just really stuck with me that I enjoyed it. We had a couple people write in their answers, so we'll get to them. Ryan Sargent, who can't be with us, but hopefully will be back with us. I think he said February. His favorite issue, he had two. He had the Jimmy Olsen one-shot by Nick Spencer that collected the backups from Action Comics and Superman 710. He said two great stories from the Superman family titles that don't seem to get a lot of attention. Spencer's Jimmy Olsen really captured a day in the life of Jimmy Olsen. Alien invasions, evil CEOs, and investigative reporting. Superman 710 will remain one of his favorite Superman and Batman team-ups ever, not only showcasing both in their world-traveling days fighting against Vandal Savage, but also showcasing the friendly relationship between the two. And then Jim Beck wrote in to say, the final issue of Uncanny X-Men, it's the book he grew up with, and that last statement by Cyclops, I finally graduated, was great. So next subject, favorite title. And basically, the way I look at this, or want to... preface it as saying the book that is always your top of the read pile book, the book that when you see it on the shipping next week list you get excited about because you're looking forward to it, you know, month in, month out type of book. So Sean, we'll start with you. Sean in San Francisco.
Run back.
Spider-Man. Okay, Sean in Pennsylvania. Back.
No, I had to find. I keep it on, I'm sorry. I keep it on mute so you guys don't have to listen to all the background noise here at the house.
Well, we'll start with you, and then you can leave.
Well, no, I'm not leaving. But I'm going to change it up again, not to steal anything. But since you said this time, what's always at the top of my list? What am I always buying? What am I always reading? Of course, Amazing Spider-Man, year in, year out. That's kind of my go-to title. It's the book that I'll always buy in floppies, even though I'm transitioning to more and more collected editions and dabbling in the electronic books. But, you know, as with most comic geeks, you know, you have one character or set of characters that you identify with and kind of follow. They become like your core character. And once I got over the whole Mephisto thing and just started enjoying the Spider-Man stories for what they were, I guess my only ding over this past year, for me, Spider Island seemed to go on a little too long. I thought that could have been like a three issue story instead of a five parter with a prologue and an epilogue and the tie-ins.
No, I agree with that. And it's a lot of stuff recently, like the last three issues I thought have been really good.
Yeah.
And some of the other folks have mentioned some of their single issues, and I think the Spider-Man covers last year were just overall really solid month in, month out.
Yep, I agree. No, go ahead, Sean. What?
I said we love us some Spidey out here on the Left Coast.
Okay. Okay, Sean, bright orange shirt, Sean.
Mine is actually not a monthly title, but is Stuff of Legend. It's a great character story. It's basically a dark toy story. Some of the characters are amazing in it. Jester is my favorite character. The current volume is focusing on him. And as we find out here in the last issue of it, his brother also. Just great all-around book.
Cool. Adam?
My favorite title, or of, what is it, new title, has been Daredevil. Trying to get back to
what are you doing?
I'm communicating this whole yeah, it has to be Daredevil. I just really just love how just simplistic this book is. Just it's an easy book to read. It doesn't, you know, you don't have to know anything really about Daredevil besides, you know, what, you know, that he's blind basically. Other than that, I mean, it's just But other than that, I mean, it's just...
You know, what if they came out with a deaf character?
Echo.
Echo? I was kidding. I was lobbing that one up for Nick, sorry.
Echo,
somebody
Echo?
Else got it before.
Yeah, I know.
But yeah, I just, you know, and I just love Marcos Martin's art, and then it's, who else is it?
And Paulo Rivera's Paulo done Rivera more, actually.
Has
yeah.
done a lot more, but yeah. But all in all, it's just, it's a good story, so.
Jeremy.
My kind of, as I kind of said previously, my one book that hasn't been relaunched as a number one in like the last, or well, since September, that's consistently at the, you know, very high on my list is X-Force. I grew up as an X-Men fan, and prior to Schism and the events post-Schism, X-Force was the one book in the line that really, you know, had that fun feeling of X-Men that I loved. And, you know, the fact that the last, like, 18-issue saga has been based around two of my all-time favorite X-Men characters, Archangel and Apocalypse, has definitely been icing on the cake. But that has just been a consistently good book month
in,
month.
You're an Archangel fan, huh?
Oh, big Archangel fan. Walt Simonson's X-Factor number 25 was one of the first X-Men or X-Men-related comics I picked up as a kid.
Most, like, X-Men fans have, like, their favorite character that most people wouldn't think. That's pretty cool. That's easier.
Yeah, if I ever meet Walt Simonson, that's what I would want him to sketch for me as an Archangel.
Cool. So,
yeah.
What I like about the book is, like, my favorite character in that book right now is Phantom X, who I, having not read Morrison's run, this guy's completely new. My introduction to him was issue one, and he just fascinates me.
Yeah.
Completely fascinating.
Yes.
It's well, been. I mean, he takes an sword to the head, and that's okay. Your other brain is working fine. What? You know,
it's such a Morrison character.
Yeah, but what's been really great is that Remender has kind of taken that ball and run with it, and he hasn't really changed the character, but he's fleshed him out a lot more than he was even in Morrison's run.
Well, he created your least favorite character of Uncanny X-Force, Uncle Cluster.
Gorilla Bob.
I just don't understand. It was so weird. Every time I read it, it sucked me out of the story. That was all. That was
Evan
my comment
Sabnor.
On that.
Evan Sabnor. That's the coolest name ever.
The what?
Evan Sabnor.
Abin Sur?
No.
Evan Sur, but his kid's name's Evan.
But it, yeah.
Oh.
Genesis?
Nice.
Yes.
But that book, I mean, it's my favorite too, and I just can't, it just seems like it's the culmination of so many different X-Men stories, from Simonson's run to Age of Apocalypse to Grant Morrison's run to the 80s Psylocke stuff. I mean, there's just so much going on there that, as an X-Men fan of long time standing, it's amazing. As somebody that isn't, I'm surprised he's had so much success for the novice X-Men reader. And that's what makes me excited, because it's like, it seems like this book is going to be around for a while, and it's like the perfect, like, blockbuster movie formula for me for an X-Men book.
Nick, I would consider myself a novice X-Men reader. I've never read Age of Apocalypse, but I had absolutely no problem following it given that the little bit I knew that, you know, Age of Apocalypse was an alternate universe, and, you know, that just knowing that much, I was able to follow it.
Well, he's been really good at making it accessible, but still keeping all that complex history, which is something that most writers, you know, crumble and curl up into the floor in a fetal position when they try to do the X-Men, because how do you take such this huge tapestry of characters that people like Chris Claremont developed over, you know, 20, 30 years, keep all of that, which is what keeps the longtime fans interested, but also make it accessible for new readers that haven't, you know, ever picked up the X-Men. He does a fantastic job of walking that line of and balancing both of those things.
So I have to disagree with you that it's not the only X book that should be at the top of your pile, because my favorite title is X-Factor. And I definitely think that is a top of the pile book. I don't know if you call it an X book or not, because it doesn't ever really tie into the universe.
Which is loosely, part of what makes it enjoyable,
right,
that it doesn't have to tie in.
Right, it's loosely tied. I mean, the characters are there, and every once in a while there's a forced crossover, which I think Peter David handles very well. I mean, you know,
I just remember that Secret Invasion one that was so hard to read.
Yeah,
and that art in the Secret Invasion one.
And one of the things you like about the book is how the recap page is always, here's what happened in the last couple issues.
Yeah.
Oh, and Peter David's daughter won a soccer tournament.
Yeah, well, in the last one, it was one of the editors having to do it because Peter David was somewhere else, and it was just, it's a very personal book, at least in that aspect.
Yeah.
He it's like he takes you under his, not under his wing, but he's also, he's had a blog for a long time, and he's very public.
But he's not on Twitter.
Yeah, he is.
He is?
Yeah, Pad Guy.
Pad Guy.
Something like that. I'm following him. He's new on Twitter, but
okay.
Yeah, he's on there.
Does he like Pad Thai?
I have no idea.
I'm gonna have a. Can I make X-Force not my number one then?
Yes.
Sure.
Okay. Then I'm gonna go with Moon Knight. It's
you don't
the
get two.
Bendis
Wait
book.
A minute. No. Go ahead.
Sorry.
Go ahead. Go ahead.
Okay. Yeah. Moon Knight is the Brian Michael Bendis book.
Although that
of
could be the. You could do that for your next one. Hang on, because next one's new title, and that one's new this year. So.
Okay.
All right, Dan, you're up.
Hey, it's Dan Garbark. I'm gonna. Everybody's gonna love hearing about this again, but. Getting back to titles that have not relaunched in the past year, and I think is a little underrated at this point, is Fables. Don't hear too much about it anymore, just because it's been around for over 100 issues. But those are continue to be, every issue is a quality issue, and it brings you know, different characters in and out of the storyline. There's a really great sort of tapestry and backstory for everyone that, you know, that Bill Willingham is able to, I said this so much better the first time, but I'm just going to say Fables. It's awesome.
Yeah. And I think the fact that as a Vertigo book, it made it to 100, that says a lot, because you don't see a lot of non-big two books make it to over 100 issues.
Plus the way that the characters are not focused on for too long, every single storyline.
Exactly.
They jump around,
yeah.
You know, and actually, I do think that it's done a disservice when events roll around, because it's the monthly, month-in and month-out stories that really make the
right.
Series.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, they've had a consistent art team. I mean, they'll have the occasional fill-ins, but they handle the fill-ins the way I always love, is they know there's a fill-in coming up, so we're going to get a guest artist to do this, and it's not going to tie into the main story. It's going to be, you know, background for another story or sort of a standalone story. And we have a spinoff to look forward to in 2012.
Do you mind if I close this out?
No, I have to go. Go ahead. No, go ahead.
Right, Joe F. here, listeners. I just want to jump in and talk about Punisher Max for a bit. Consistently at the top of my reading pile. I just love the way that they integrate the Punisher that's very close to the one we know into a very close to the real world atmosphere. They never back down from the blood and the violence. Garth Ennis and Steve, or actually that's Daniel Way, isn't it?
No, it's Garth.
No, it's
Jason Aaron.
Oh my god!
And
yeah,
Are you even reading the book, man?
Jason Aaron and Steve Dillon never back down from the blood and the guts. And it just has the feel. It has an epic feel that this is going to be in print for a long time, talked about for a long time. It's going to be something that's accessible for a long time. And if anything was ever a perfect pitch for a Punisher movie, it's this.
I agree, Joeph. I agree.
Something tells me I'm not alone in my love for Punisher, Max.
Because the last three Punisher movies have worked out so well.
If they would have followed this this blueprint, this outline, if I wouldn't have messed up his name, I would.
You don't like Dolph Lundgren?
Oh yeah, three. Yeah,
unfortunately, the next Punisher you're going to see live action is going to be on TV, so it's going to be neutered.
Get out.
It'll be like Marvel U no. Punisher.
No. They were going to make that female Disney, Punisher TV
Disney
series.
Punisher.
That?
Yeah. Okay, Justin, join the conversation.
I think I said Batman last time.
Yeah,
I did. If I'm not with them, I'm just going to say Batman. Colin?
Yeah, well, mine's The Boys. Shocking, but month in, month out, I can't wait to read it.
Some people.
It's always the first, I know. I get home and then kids are still up and there I am sitting on the sofa reading
The
Boys.
What does that say about you as a human being?
I remember one. I was sitting in the kitchen at the island and they were in the living room watching TV and I'm just sitting going, this is just so wrong. I'm sitting here reading this book. It was probably the one that took place in the brothel that had the one page of original art I want to buy most of all, where they had the nude. It was the classic comic covers, but done in nudes. And I just remember looking at that page going, that is so awesome. And going, I'd love to own that, but you couldn't really hang it anywhere. But
prominently display it right in the store.
Yeah, but that was one I really liked. There we go.
Yeah, you know the fact that you like that and Dexter and some of your other interests, you're like one step away from serial killer.
Dexter's awesome.
I think that
I think Chad would agree that Dexter's awesome. We're all serial killers.
I watched half of season six today.
I
don't think a true serial killer would watch Dexter, though. I think a true serial killer would watch like Fantasia or something that we wouldn't expect. Like a serial killer would not, or that'd be like hiding in plain sight, you know? That'd be like Superman. Or Clark Kent wearing a Superman T-shirt with his glasses on, you know.
Wasn't that?
I think
Smallville?
We should move on to the next topic before Joe goes okay. down.
Let me get to my writers in. Jim Beck said the favorite title is Jonah Hex carrying over into All-Star Western so far. He said the pre-New 52 Jonah Hex was the book that offered the best weird Twilight Zone style one and done stories in a market overwhelmed with multi-issue events. And let's see, Ryan, favorite title, Batman Incorporated and Justice League Generation Lost. The delays hurt Incorporated a bit, but I always enjoyed the idea from when it was first announced. And Generation Lost was the best bi-weekly book DC has done since 52 and had plenty of great character and action.
I love that book, too. I
haven't read it. I've been
on that.
Luckily, I just got a used copy of the first hardcover, and I might
give that a read.
It's very
good, especially if you've read the old Keith Giffen
and Mateus.
And Mateus that did in the 80s, 90s. Yeah, I mean, it follows up really well to that.
And Batman Inc., I think, was also hurt a little bit by the New 52.
The horrible ending?
Well, I mean, I think that's why they had that horrible
ending. If you just stop at it.
If you
one issue prior.
Well, if you read...
Leviathan, I thought
Leviathan Strikes. Yeah. Did you not like Leviathan?
I did not.
I enjoyed it. I just thought it was a... In fact, I think that was the real ending. Issues, and then
it was
they
supposed to be
them into one book.
It was supposed to be two more issues or three more issues, and they just put out that Leviathan.
But I think it made it a lot more confusing though with the New 52 because of like Batwing. Like they said, the Batwing was supposedly dead, but he has his own book in New 52. Yeah.
He didn't die in Leviathan. No,
yeah, he did.
They mentioned it.
They made a big deal about
they
it.
They killed
on
Batwing.
He was one of, he
I
was,
read it. I didn't read it.
Don't
meet him
he was
dying.
One of the characters that died.
It's Grant Morrison. I mean, you
yeah,
could
I didn't see him
dying.
Yeah.
I mean,
well, that could be. I didn't see
it,
him
like,
dying.
Over the comm, he turns around in that thing, and then he says
yeah,
something.
I don't think it's something shown.
And
in the
then
book.
They
it's,
said on,
oh,
the,
okay.
on a communicator,
the
like throughout it, they're like Batwing is dead or something.
I wouldn't. I don't remember.
But they don't show anything. So that's another cool thing about that.
Yeah, I always read. Morrison books and then go look up what I just read on Wikipedia just so I know what happened.
No, I hear you. Ryan that. Wow, this is so off subject, but I read Leviathan Strikes and I said this is my perfect Morrison book. I have no idea what's going on, but I really enjoy it. Yeah. That's how I look at the last issue of Final Crisis, the last issue of Batman Returns. I didn't know what was going on, but overall I found
still
it.
Still can't tell you what happened in that. Seven Soldiers of Victory.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. Oh, absolutely. That was... What? I'm reading it. I don't know.
Call but Ryan. He'll give you a 10-minute dissertation.
Okay. Now, let's move on. Favorite new title. And what I mean by this is something that's launched this year. So something, I guess, under 12 issues. That's why I said Moon Knight might fall into that, because I think it's only at, like, issue 8 or something. So, well, no, but it could be one of the new 52. It could be a new Marvel book.
I'd say Marvel's probably had 52 number ones also.
That's true.
Sorry.
So who wants to go first instead of me picking? Matt!
Blue Estate from Image is by far my favorite new book. I mean, that book has sex, drugs, crime, violence. I mean,
I just found my coaster that Victor
Gisler.
I'm so sorry for it, but he said, you know, hey, if you ordered my book, I'll send you something, and he did. It's got a little sketch on it. It's very,
awesome.
Very cool.
But that book, if you're not reading that book, you need to start reading it. It is just,
you should buy it. Like, truly, the story is amazing. You should buy that book for the covers.
Yeah, I know. That money shot cover with the camera. Oh, yeah. Or the first one with the chick in the
box
glass.
There's an upcoming Star Wars parody cover that's amazing.
You want to, like, tell us what it's about?
Sex,
drugs,
yeah.
It's set in L.A., and it's just a L.A. noir type of story. There's actors that are doing coke and real estate scams, and
well, I understand why Matt likes it now.
But it's just very well done. It's got, like, you know, four or five different plots for all these criminals. It's got the bumbling PI, the trophy wife, the gay action hero.
I was gonna say, did you read the last one? Yeah. Where the main star, like, he's married to this hot chick, and it turns out he's sleeping with his black bodyguard.
Like, it's just like, what? And it's just kind of everything is interwoven, and you're just starting to see how things are interwoven.
It's a very Brubaker crime type, like, story to me.
The hero, if you could call it that, you know, turns out to be a hitman, like the sniper who goes
the recovering alcohol. Oh, you haven't read it yet?
No, I got the trade.
He goes to, like, AA meetings to hang out. It's really good. So,
you know what? If you buy it and you don't like it, I'll buy it off of you.
Wow. And the first one's only, what, $12.99?
For, like, four issues?
I've only done that once before, and I failed, but I guarantee you this
one. Yeah, no, I agree with Matt. That one's a very good book.
Okay. Next, you guys jump in. Don't make me point to you.
Well, you know, I'm gonna cheat a little bit on this one. Being a trade reader, I tend to get my books a little bit later than everybody else. So over the course of the past year, I first discovered American Vampire. So that's my favorite new title, and I love the way the storylines take place in different decades, following the same characters. I love the way that, you know, it captures the zeitgeist of each era that the storyline takes place in.
That's a triple word yeah.
Bong bong. Scott Snyder has, and you know, the thing that I love most of all is that it was launched kind of on the back of Stephen King,
absolutely
writing half the book, and then he was gone for the second arc. But I think it's better without him, because, you know, without the fanfare of Stephen King, Scott Snyder's really been able to take the book, make it his own, and keep it interesting to the point that I come back every time.
And that
it's
was
collected.
Actually my second serious choice for best title was American Vampire. And, you know, when he announced that there was going to be a miniseries, I was kind of getting skeptical, because it's like, here we go, it's popular, let's throw a miniseries out there. But even the miniseries was great. I mean, it was just, I mean, that is some amazing, and I like how there's a different. Like, there's a different genres of vampires. Like, you know, they're not all... They don't all have the same weaknesses, like, in most vampire-type books.
Mm-hmm. So. Turn off the power strip.
Anyway.
Sorry, I was getting a low battery warning on the recorder. I'm like, it's plugged in. How can there be a low battery?
Sorry about
Didn't
that.
Turn on the power strip. It's having funny if it had stopped recording. We ran out of juice. That would have been hilarious.
I don't have the video tonight to watch the Three Stooges try to run it.
Because it's about the same time.
Yeah, that's why I double checked, because I'm like, yeah, I'm about to say what I said last time when I said a bad word. I'll jump in. My favorite this year has been Swamp Thing. I'm a Swamp Thing fan from way back. I remember getting a reprint of the first couple of the original series back in the 70s and just finding it fascinating. And I remember reading the before Alan Moore, that Swamp Thing run. None of you guys remember there was a cartoon. There were action figures.
I remember the cartoon.
And then it kind of went down. There was a TV show. I had some DVDs.
There was a cartoon before there was a comic book?
No, but I think the
cartoon popularized the comic.
They worked together. I think when the book, and they've never reprinted that, the Saga of the Swamp Thing 1 through 19, I don't think they've ever reprinted.
And the movies.
The pre-Alan Moore stuff.
By Wes Craven.
There was an Adrian Barboa, right?
That's the 70s stuff. I'm talking about 80s stuff. But so I've loved it for a long time, and it's had a couple redos. It had a Brian K. Vaughan that was focusing on his daughter, which didn't really work. And then there was one after that where the art was just really wonky, and I think that hurt the book. I wanted to like it, but it wasn't very good. And then so Snyder started this, and I'm like, okay, I have hope because it's Snyder. Yannick Paquette, I'd just fallen in love with his artwork during Batman Incorporated. And...
why did you just touch Adam on the leg?
Because he's bouncing both legs and the table's shaking and it's just like, stop. Sorry. But and so I went into it really with high hopes and it's really exceeded them. One of the things that I'm happy I got to do this over again because I forgot to mention was that he's incorporated all of Alan Moore's run and didn't discount it, didn't say that didn't happen. It clearly all of that did happen. He's even... The Big Bad is actually part of Alan Moore's run that led in actually to the beginning of Hellblazer. It was a big plot with John Constantine. I think it was around issue 50 of the original Swamp Thing. No, you're going
to
know who it is, but it's the guys who turn their heads around.
No, I'm reading the old Alan Moore stuff now. So
oh, you'll get to it. But oh, it's
you spoiled the 30-year-old thing.
You're right. I'm sorry. I'm sorry.
Cool, but it's a spoiler alert.
I love the fact that he's, you know, even like what he's done with the Batman, he's saying, okay, you have all this history, and he's adding to it, and he's adding stuff that's new and fresh, and that's kind of what he's doing with this. I just love the idea that you have a guy who doesn't want to be Swamp Thing, and actually we haven't really seen Swamp Thing yet through four issues. You have his old girlfriend who actually he now has to be wary of because she's part of the rot. And it's just, I'm really looking forward to that book. I can't wait for the next one to see what's going on.
The only thing that's kind of disappointing is Paquette should be drawing really hot chicks. Well, I mean, he's just so talented.
Yeah,
at that.
No, right.
You're kind of like Swamp Thing. Like,
but you have to wonder, did he take this on as a challenge?
Yeah, maybe. But I mean, he's doing a fantastic job.
You know, that's like when you see Frank Cho do something that's not. You know, hot babes, it's like, you know, maybe he wanted to say, hey, you know, I've done that. Let's try something new. That's part of my concern with Marcos Martin. I dearly love the way he does Spider-Man and Daredevil. But is he now bored with that and he wants to go do something else? Because I know he's got an indie project coming up. Is he going to move now away and do more stuff like that? Because I'm dearly going to miss him on doing a Spider-Man book if he gets, I don't want to say big, but, you know, beyond that. So Swamp Thing's my pick. Next...
I'll jump in. This is Dan again. When I was putting together my list, my pull list is pretty well, you know, it's pretty tight.
We'll fix that. Don't worry.
Yeah. I try a lot of books, but you know, the ones that I stick with, you know, are ones that I really think are worth the time. But then the ones that actually float to the top of that pile, you know, are, I had to decide because I always read the one that I want to read the most. Last week turned out to be Catwoman. And Catwoman, because of the controversy that it launched with, I think sort of got a raw deal with the new 52 launch. You know, I can kind of skip over my favorite new artist on here is going to be Guillaume Marsh. Was sort of what they focused the book on was, you know, sort of this good girl art or bad girl art. And but the plot by Judd Winnick and the characterization is fantastic. You know, really fleshing out the characters, giving a lot of backstory to the supporting cast, and a lot of motivation to Catwoman to explain why she does what she does. And it's just one of those great marriages of writing and artwork.
So speaking of that, is it based, is Catwoman using the history of the Year One character, where she was a former prostitute? They've kind of hinted at that, but they haven't come out and said it.
I don't think so. I mean, it would fit in. I mean, there's been some glimpses of her past and, you know, some abuse and things. Perhaps that's what they were.
Well, her one friend was Lola, and I thought that was the other prostitute that she roomed with in.
Well, you know, in, also in Year One. I mean, I don't know a whole lot of background on the character. In fact, I got the Batman Year One movie on DVD for Christmas. I haven't watched it yet.
It's very good. I mean, it sticks to the book very well.
I mean, I have read Year One. It's been quite a while, but you know, I don't feel like I needed to know all that background. In fact, just last week I read the first trade of the Gotham City Sirens, and that was sort of convoluted. There was a lot of continuity history stuff going on when that book came out that I think sort of detracted from the book.
Yeah,
but this one, this was like, I felt like it was a really good fresh launch.
That really wasn't Paul Dini's best work on Gotham City Sirens. I mean, I read the book, but I mean, it was just, I usually like his writing, but he just kind of fell flat there. I just think he tried to take on too many characters and didn't handle it very well.
Yes, so Catwoman.
This category I'm really torn on.
You can pick two.
Okay. And I might step on Nick again. We'll find out.
Okay, Nick, you go first. Sorry.
Yeah. Nick, do you want to go first? Do you want to go first just in case?
Jeremy might step on you, so.
Yeah, because I'm assuming that means that you're thinking about Wolverine and the X-Men.
Absolutely.
Yeah, it's right out of the gate, it feels like a completely fleshed out a comic with all new, well, I shouldn't say all new characters, but a lot of new characters, and each one of them with very little introduction has me excited. Like, I want to see more Brew. I want to see more Kid Gladiator. I want to see more of that, the descendant of, how do you pronounce it? Krakoa?
Yes.
Yeah.
That was the best part of that last issue when, oh, you want to be part of the team? Okay, you know, just you want to be an X-Man, and then the making of the tree, that was fantastic.
And the fact that Quentin Quire, you know, is that character, he's turning him into such a cool character. In as much as he's like the, I was about to say Dennis the Menace, that's terrible. He's like a Calvin kind of character where, you know, he's like up to like no good, but in reality, it seems like he's trying to hide his heart of gold.
Yeah, his conversation with Krakoa in the most recent issue was fantastic.
Totally character changing. You know, like I see the character from a completely different, not just like a Damian type, like how Damian started off, like completely like nothing to really latch onto, and then eventually got fleshed out. Same kind of thing, and just little like drops that are just awesome, like Iceman. You know, all big Iceman fans, like I'm a big Iceman fan.
Absolutely.
You're always waiting for him to get his potential, and they're playing that up, that dropping Dupe into the mansion. I mean, there's just so much. It feels like each issue is just packed with stuff.
Yeah.
My only concern with that is the Nick Bradshaw taking over on the art. I've never really seen it. I've just seen the covers he's done, the variant covers and things, and I don't like it.
Nick Bradshaw's actually done some X-Men before. He handled interior duties on the Monstrous arc of Astonishing X-Men. He did all right.
Okay.
Which arc was that? Was that
Jason Pearson?
Was that the one right after Ellis? After the Ghost Boxes?
No, yeah. It went Ghost Boxes, then it went something with Phil Jimenez, and then it went this.
Okay, because the Phil Jimenez stuff was terrible art.
You're out of your mind.
I normally like it. I just didn't care for it in that run.
Actually, that.
But you do have a point, Colin. It is a very drastic change from Chris Bocciolo.
Well, and Bocciolo is a very
acquired taste.
I don't know. Acquired. He's different. It's not.
Scratchy.
You don't like it. That's fine. It doesn't. Different isn't necessarily bad, but my concern just. Bradshaw just looks very manga. Just like when I think back to that X Club number one cover in Doctor, was it Reyes? Her face is just horrible.
He's
on
an
that
Art
cover.
Adams clone is what
he is. He's very Art Adams, but the faces are even a little more squished and. Yeah. The noses are, I don't know.
There's kind of like a house style
the eyes don't
going, on,
right.
at,
no,
going on at Marvel right now with like Koi Pham, Jim Chung, this guy Nick Bradshaw, and it's all kind of centered around like the Travis Chere fan club. Now,
I always said Cherist.
Anyway, but I think a lot of it goes into C.B. Sobolski scouring the globe and just picking out whatever artist he likes. And
that
then he brings
be,
him
yeah.
into Marvel, gets him on books.
Yeah. Yeah, because he likes to go across the globe so he can eat foreign food and have Marvel pay for it. He's like just as much into food as he is comics. It's crazy.
Oh, yeah?
He's like a huge foodie.
Hmm.
So since I gave Nick the opportunity to do that one, my second one, and I'm definitely approaching this just from the favorite. I wouldn't necessarily say best because there are a lot of other issues that I would classify as best new series, but my absolute favorite next to Wolverine and the X-Men would be Aquaman. I think out
you?
Of, yeah, I know. But
what was that Death of a Prince trade?
Have you read that?
I have actually. It's fantastic. Anyone who doesn't think Aquaman is cool should read Death of a Prince. But no, in all seriousness, the new 52 relaunch.
Just want to keep reorder.
Jeff Johns has just done an amazing job of making this character relevant and serious, and at the same time being, you know, smart enough to know that yes, Aquaman is thought of as a joke. Most people know him from the Super Friends iteration, and he's incorporated that into the series in a way that's like empowering to Aquaman without necessarily mocking the character. He's just, you know, turning him into kind of a DC badass. Like, and it's something that I would have never thought possible for that character, just given a lot of people's preconceived notions on him. And
this goes out to Ryan, but whank.
I'm not a big Jeff Johns fan. I think he suffers from the same thing that you guys accuse Brian Bendis of writing too much.
I do too.
I think he's getting very blah and very predictable, but I like what he's doing with Aquaman. I think his Justice League...
I liked him better in Justice League than I liked him in the last issue of Aquaman.
See, I think his Justice League is boring, predictable,
oh, it is,
very
but
slow.
I like the Aquaman part of it. He was a much different Aquaman.
I was thinking about that the other day, that this... The Justice League is moving a little slow, but I really think that's mainly because it's one of these books that they're really trying to introduce to all these characters in the way to a new audience. So I think in a way they have to do it, but the way about it I think is kind of wrong. Because I think they had to do the same thing with Teen Titans. Yeah. But I think they did a really better job with Teen Titans of keeping a story going and introducing characters
I think if I was them, I would have done a current day arc, and then the second arc I might have went back, or I would have interlaced character histories over the first couple arcs.
I will agree with you that I think, you know, both Bendis and Johns have reached the point where they've become so crucial to their respective companies that it's now reached a point where you can tell which projects they're excited about.
Right.
And like, the other projects they're just writing to kind of...
Like Bendis with Moon Knight.
Right. Bendis with Moon Knight, you can tell he's enjoying that.
Absolutely.
And I will agree, you know, for all of my bashing on Avengers, Moon Knight is fantastic. It reads like the Bendis that I enjoyed reading. And Aquaman has that Jeff
Johns.
Yeah,
absolutely. That's what I was trying to say, is I like what he's doing there. I like the little quips he throws out, like, I don't talk to fish. You know, he orders fish in the first issue. I think that stuff's funny. It makes the character relatable.
Just as someone who's always liked Aquaman, you know, it's nice to see that character get its due.
You were the only person I had knew that said Aquaman was their most, like, looked forward to book in the new 52. So
yeah,
I have to go back to Hwank because an issue and in issue 3 they actually explain that as being the sound of a seal.
Oh, okay. Well, thank you.
So Hwank, because
when I think of a seal, I think of Hwank.
They say Hwank.
I don't either. Okay.
It's worded in them.
I don't know.
Anybody else?
I would say Hwank. Quickly,
Batwing.
No.
No, I thought about that, but I passed on it. I would say All-Star Western or iVampire. And All-Star Western I was kind of looking forward to, and I just like the backstory of it, and I think I like that time setting. Like All-Star Western, or All-Star Westerns in general, just set back in time about that time period is always interesting. And iVampire was a book that I was never going to read it. I was never going to pick it up, and then somebody here said, you better read it. And it's just such an enjoyable book. It's just, I mean, you know, it's not going to change your life or anything, but it's a fun read.
Yeah. Unexpected.
Unexpected, yeah. Enjoyable. I don't mind that they seem to be treading into other areas, whether there's a point to it or not, or they're just trying to suck you in because they want you to like it. But like you said, it's just an enjoyable, fun read.
I still have to go.
Okay.
First time too, when I did the dry run, I picked.
dry run. That's what we call it—a dry run.
I picked Animal Man, I still stand behind that book 100%. But I want to show a little love for another book. Also, the relaunched Batman and Robin.
Yeah.
Is incredible. The dynamics between Damian Wayne and Bruce Wayne are great. And the fact that when they're in costume as Batman and Robin, it's a different character. It's mm-hmm. a different character set. And then you throw in Alfred as sort of Bruce Wayne's advisor more in this than just his friend and you know.
And you know what's really fascinating, too, is reading that now to reading the stuff pre-relaunch where Dick was Batman. You realize that Dick's a better father than Bruce is. Not... Like just he like seemed to understand Damian,
which is kind of funny because he was raised by Bruce.
Yeah,
like, maybe that's why, because they had all those confrontations throughout. Yeah, you know, but, history.
But then even swap that a little bit with the last Batman, which had him still teaching Dick.
Yeah,
giving that little bit of history, like that Snyder threw into that. It's just such a mythos that everybody's building on themselves, and I don't know how much input they have to one another, but it is really neat.
Yeah.
And then after reading Leviathan Strikes, how the heck that's going to work with Batman and Robin.
And I know we don't have a best editor category, but I think Mike Martz would win it in my mind for that, because he's the Bat Family editor, and I think he does a good job at keeping those books tied together enough that they don't step on each other, but they all have their own voice.
Yeah, absolutely. Because when people do say, I mean, I get a lot of that, you know, when I say, you know, do we need another event, when they announce the new Mighty Avengers or whatever it's going to be for the movie, I'm like, do we need another Avengers book? People always say, well, do we need another Batman book? And I go,
we can never not
but you know what? They're all different. And you can like one and not the other. You don't have to read them all. They don't tie together. Like, the other day I was talking about the Avengers, and I'm like, well, I can't remember which Avengers it was, because Norman Osborn was in it. Oh, well, he's in two of them. Yeah. And you're getting confused between books. The Batmans are pretty
And the great thing about it is if you only want to read Batman, you can.
Yeah.
But you're better, you know, reading all four, you're better for it. Like, they're all good.
I agree. Let me do the two write-in guys. Favorite new title, Jim Beck has IDW's new ongoing Star Trek, and he also said Swamp Thing. Good man. And Ryan, Action Comics Volume 2. Gosh, I can't imagine why. And Batwoman. Yes, everyone will know why I like action. However, everyone should give Batwoman a read through just once. If the story doesn't catch you, the art will. It's fantastic. And I agree.
The
art, I remember, I think it might be the next issue, the cover on it. I just remember it just stopped me cold in the previews, which doesn't happen often. You know, you're like, oh, there's a cover. The last issue of Batman with the owl Batman, that stopped me. But I remember it was a layered, someone looking into the water and somebody looking up from the water, but there were six. It was just amazing.
And for you art collectors, you can buy very reasonably priced art on his website.
Really?
Yeah, reasonably? I mean, what do you mean by reasonable?
His pages are very...
Yeah.
No, really? Like 200, 250, depending on what you're looking at. Yeah, and his art, his original art is very reasonable compared to a lot of people.
The third.
Yes, there's some Prometheus stuff.
I would imagine his stuff going in the thousands.
I mean, his covers are up there, but everybody's covers are up there.
Sure.
But he's very reasonable.
I'm worried that you're
going to
see a drop-off when Amy...
Is Reader the writer?
No.
No, she's
the reader.
In that Elegy, the original Batwoman thing?
Oh, I think
she did half. It was like him on top and her on the bottom.
Yeah, I think it's going to be similar. So, is it drawing? You think so?
I thought so in the Zero. I think it was I really like her style. Like, don't get me wrong, but I think I'm worried that that'll be one of those things where people pick it up.
That is the kind of book that people get it almost for the art, you know, as well as the story. And so if there is a drastic art change, I could see it affecting the book. But I agree with you that her stuff is, is good.
Less caffeine, Adam.
I think it's less jarring if it's not, like, his and hers. It's
one or the other. Yeah,
I think the colorist will have a lot to do with tying it
together. I wonder if they're keeping the same guy that always does his colors, Mick.
That would make sense, because I wonder how much of his stuff is the colors.
Wrestler. Wrestler.
It is very well.
Okay. Adam doesn't think he went. Adam, best new title.
I don't think I did. For me, it's Batman. Even though it's not really new, it's...
it's not on yet.
But I... But I know I've really enjoyed this. In fact, if any of the New 52 books, I really think it did exactly what the New 52 books have said they were going to do, and that was to reintroduce characters not only to the existing audience but a new audience, because it's new that new readers can just jump right into it of whoever, you know, new villain. They introduced the characters really well in that first issue, but for old readers, you can still jump in because you still know the characters that they have, so they're, you know, they still have existing characters as well. But it's fresh for them as well. So, no, I've really just enjoyed that book all the way.
And it's kind of funny that you say it's the easiest, or did the best of introducing the book again, because it was one of the least rebooted families of the New 52. Yeah. That and Green Lantern were hardly touched.
Yeah. And they didn't need to be touched.
Well, no, because they were selling. And I think he did a wonderful job at bringing in new readership and maintaining continuity, where a lot of the other books had a completely fresh starting point and failed.
You know, too, it's also funny that you use the word easy to jump into, because that book is so dense. Like, there's just a lot, I feel, packed in, like, going back into the history of Gotham and how he's using Gotham almost as a character.
But in a way that they can do it for new readers.
Yeah, we were saying, I think in the pre-recording, Nick had said, you know, he's treating Gotham the way that James Robinson treated Opal City in Starman. Like, Gotham is a character in Batman.
But to be honest, Scott Snyder could, like, write the description of a piece of 2x4 at Home Depot, and I'd be interested. I mean,
I think so, too.
The way he described Wayne Tower. No, the way he described Wayne Tower in graphic detail in issue 2 was just.
That was so amazing.
Oh, yeah, that was.
Okay. Let's get moving
on. I remember rereading it right after I read it, and then I realized, wait a minute. Like, that was just exposition.
Oh, Sean, you got a best new title?
Sean in California?
Yes, Sean in California, sorry.
Not going to change that one. Like I said earlier, I'm really enjoying the new action series. I think Grant Morrison really got the memo and took a good re-looking at that character. I like the fact that he's still trying to figure out his powers, and the book really had, for me anyways, it kind of took me back to when I was a kid and I'd pick up a superhero book and I could just get totally drawn into the story. I also thought the artwork was really, really good in that book. I know that sounds totally fanboy, like the art's really, really good, but it was. It just, each page flowed into the next.
Other than his eyes not matching.
Good sense of energy. And like I said, I'm in for the ride on that book anyways. Okay. Out of the New 52. That's the one that grabbed me the most.
Cool.
His eyes don't match.
Okay, fair enough. it is funny when somebody comes in and, you know, I get somebody with a lazy eye and I just look at them.
Oh, man.
Are you Superman?
Sorry.
There's going to be a picketing in front of the store.
It's
bad.
You better it's horrible.
Okay.
Next topic, please.
Next topic. Best new character, or favorite new character. And what I mean by this is somebody that's been introduced in the last year, I guess, or so, but someone that you really didn't know about, but that's really made a mark that you're enjoying. You know, it could be a bad guy. It could be a new hero.
Superman doesn't count, right?
Superman does not count. He's been around a little while.
Well, not really.
Well, okay, Nick, you can go first. You pick Superman. That's fine.
I'm joking. I don't want Superman.
Okay, who do you want? Quentin Quire. No, wait.
Miles Morales.
Oh, really?
Tell me on it. Let's hear it.
It's not a cop, but I really like the character. I really like that. If you think about where DC is going right now, there's no legacy characters anymore, and I'm a big fan of legacy characters. And I think the more that they delve into this, the more interesting it could be. And it's really the only Ultimate book, and I've read every single Ultimate book, that I'm excited to read anymore, just because the potential is there. And the character itself, it's a new take on, you know, something that, you know, we've read before, I guess. But just the legacy aspect of it has me interested.
Okay. Sean Wheatley.
Hey, well, I guess if the reference point, and it's funny because Nick and I have been joking in the chat over here about how, you know, how exacting we are, and like someone's recording these for posterity here. And we have all
posterity, but yeah.
So for me, it's not a new book or a new series, but it's all new to me because I haven't read it.
That's fine.
And that's the IDW G.I. Joe stuff. And I actually got one of the trades for Christmas under the tree. And I think, was that Joe F. who got
me
turned on?
Yes, Joe is big into the Joe.
Big time. Big time.
Well, we knew that going in. But anywho. So for me, I've been having a lot of fun. I don't buy the single issues. I'm buying the trades. And then when they do those 100-page specials where they collect four or five issues that lead up to a trade, I've been picking those all up. And like I said, I like the nice, clean art. It's modern enough, but it still feels kind of I think it's got a little bit of that Marvel House style to it, which resonates with folks my age.
Who's the breakout character for you there, Sean?
What's that?
Who's the breakout character for you there?
The breakout character?
Yeah, we're doing favorite character.
Favorite new character.
The new Venom.
Suddenly he's got a co-starring role in G.I. Joe.
Joe, help him out.
Help him out.
You know, actually, what'd you think of Chuckles' role in G.I. Joe?
Oh, is that your favorite new character?
Well, you know, let me just use that to segue into my favorite new character, because the Chuckles really killed it this year in G.I. Joe Cobra.
Ah, literally.
Yeah. High five on that one. Oh, man. But, Chuckles a character. Chuckles a character who didn't receive much play in the G.I. Joe cartoon or movie. I think he had, like, one vocal line in the movie where he did nothing but scream.
He's the one who started the helicopter up in the G.I. Joe animated movie.
Yeah, but trust me, what he did in G.I. Joe Cobra was awesome. Way above and beyond anything that any way that he'd ever been used before in the story about espionage and manipulation.
You can ruin it. It's been out for like
and killing and revenge when he kills Cobra Commander.
What? Well, that's why the comment was he killed Cobra Commander.
I know.
Next.
Okay. Matt.
This is going to be a weird pick, and it may be because I just read it all this week. Luther Strode.
Okay.
In the Strange Talents of Luther Strode. Yeah. And this is it's a book about a little nerdy kid who reads comics, and he sends away for the Atlas Strength Kit out of the back of the book and starts reading it and doing the exercises, and all of a sudden he's like this stud that's killing people. And, you know, the jock who's always beating him up, he just, like, punches him in the face. Knocks the kid out, gets the girl, extreme. Like...
Well, it's funny.
You don't know what's going on at this point.
Yeah.
Like,
I read number one. They gave us a preview even before we ordered it. So it was so far, you know, so that's 2 months ahead of time. And then, so I read that, and number one came out, and so fine. And then number two came out, and I read it, and I remember reading it going, what? You know, because I'd read it 2 months, you know, what? This is bizarre. And I, of course, didn't have any number ones to go back and look at. But, yeah, that was quite a neat book.
I'll go next. Justin here. I will go to Batwing now.
No!
I won't let you get ahead of me.
Damn.
I think, now as somebody who hasn't read Incorporated, but it kind of got like a lot of people didn't like Incorporated with everybody all over the place, and they were kind of like, who are all these people and what's going on? Like, do we really need a Batman in Africa? Do we need a Batman here? But since the relaunch, after hearing all these people kind of, it's no good, Batwing of the relaunch almost made my favorite new title, because it's just
a really interesting take. And Batman's involved for about, what, like 1 second in the first issue, and then it's all about Batwing.
Yeah.
And it's totally stands on its own. It doesn't rely on Batman.
Short of the title, you'd never
short of the
know
title, you would never know it's a Bat book, really. I mean, yeah. it's just a really, I mean, his history, the story, it's a really good book.
No, I'll give you that. This is Colin. That was my number one as well. Only because I went into it going, who cares? Here's a fringe character that was in Batman Incorporated by a writer that I'm not a huge fan of, and isn't really critically well received. And you know. What?
Sorry.
No, people aren't huge fans of his. And then you also have an artist I've never heard of. So character, I don't know. You know, do we need an African Batman? But reading it, I read the, as I read all the number ones, and I went, "Wow, that was really good." And now, as of number four, which had a different artist, I think it was Chris Cross, doing a back previous story. This one's fascinating to me, and I'm very much looking forward to the next issue.
If dressing up in a bat suit and being part of Batman Incorporated is what gets a character like that, mm-hmm. then I'm all for it.
Yeah,
because going in, I was like, what? Like, why? Like, let's give Black Bat or Cassandra Cain her own book. Like, I'd much rather read that. Cassandra I was so Cain, wrong.
Yeah,
I was so wrong. Like, this was one of the, there was like five New 52 books I wasn't going to get day one.
Yeah.
This was one of them. Immediately added it to my list.
Yeah. And we were, it's like you said, we were all saying beforehand, there were so many more Batman Incorporated, Batman
love to
family
have a Cassandra
characters.
Cain book.
Why wouldn't you do that? And then, it's...
No, I wanted a Man of Bats book.
Oh my God, yes, I want a Man of Bats book.
I'm sure there'll be a mini.
There better be a Man of Bats book.
Unless they,
maybe that should have been my favorite issue. That was an awesome issue of
Batman
Incorporated. That was so good.
What it did is it really informed me about Batman, too. Can somebody be Batman without $1 billion?
Yeah.
Yes. And not just Man of Bats. Definitely not Man of Bats. But even Batwing, where he kind of set him up, but, he has his guy helping him, but...
They're hinting that he has money.
It was definitely hinted to in Leviathan. His appearance in Leviathan definitely hinted that he had some money.
The fact that we all
money.
Think he... I mean, he was one of the kids, drug cartel kids, right?
Right.
That they introduced last
episode. I get more of a Blade feeling of Batwing, kind of like where he used to go back to the abandoned warehouse. He had a bunch of stuff, and it seemed like he had a lot, but he was like living in an abandoned warehouse, and it's kind of more of...
Like, all of his money is...
Doesn't he have a big computer?
Yeah. He doesn't have this other side.
Didn't he have a
prime
computer that was his before?
Yeah, he has something. Yeah, but I love how it's talking about this older group of superheroes in Africa. So it's adding, a legacy, another layer to the story, and just the... it's a really good story.
And I will...
Can I disagree from California?
Sure, you can always disagree, Sean.
Only from California.
Only from California. I thought that was the weakest of the new or of any of those Bat books. The problem I had was, would Batman choose somebody with so little experience and the fact that he's a cop?
But
so I think for me, those two pieces, it was hard for me to suspend disbelief.
Well, I think he's a cop, but he's a cop in a very corrupt system. Is kind of how I looked at that.
Yeah, and reading his origin in the later issues, he's definitely not lacking for experience.
Right, yeah.
Could be I don't know how much of a spoiler it would be to just
debate. Don't spoil number four.
Well, just the, the basic. Just the basic general origin is he was like a child soldier in Uganda.
Right.
And he wasn't just a child soldier in he was like,
I got
12-year-old Rambo, track anything, kill anything,
No,
they didn't do a very good job in that first two issues.
Because he did it
the
for
second
me.
One a little bit, but it was really the third issue.
Yeah, the third and fourth have really.
Yeah, if you just stopped after one, like I read a Vampire one, I was like, okay, done. But then you go back, and it gets same kind of thing with Batwing.
Okay, Adam, so we don't forget you. Get to your list.
No,
we'll come back to you next.
Okay. My favorite character, new character, is the Architect from Gates of Gotham. I just love the whole story and the whole mystery of it, too, of who this character was. And I just really enjoyed the character. That's it.
Scott Snyder really needs to jump on here.
I mean, I know.
Like, he'll come on and we'll be like, God.
Yeah. Just at least we can honestly say it would be this way regardless.
That's true.
That's right. Well, Sean. Maybe he'll listen and join
us. Or Dan, I'm sorry, you're already talking. You go
first. Thanks. Only because I don't know where else to mention this title, I'm going to put this in as my favorite new character. Witch Doctor.
Okay.
You know, just finished the first four issue mini, and is the one shot just came out this week, I believe.
Yes.
And just a great sort of an amalgam of a number of different characters, and they sort of beat it to death in the publicity materials about he's Dr. House meets Dr. Strange. It does fit. And the character doesn't so much stand out as just, it's one of those great books where anybody in these situations, it would be really fun to read, which it is. So I just wanted to mention The Witch Doctor.
Okay. Jeremy.
Mine was probably be Andrew Brunette, who's the lead character of iVampire.
Oh, okay.
You know, it's funny we say that because I had to look it up because... Yeah.
The name doesn't matter.
He's just the guy.
Male vampire number one.
Yeah.
Andrew Brunette, I mean.
He's kind of
nondescript.
Yeah. But it's like, you know, a couple of us have already said, the book, just from a plot point of view, it's something that's not new. You know, guy is all-powerful, Lord of the Vampires, who's remorseful at being a vampire, and, you know, his true love, the woman he bit like 400 years ago, is trying to now become Lord of the Vampires and destroy him and destroy humanity.
Did you not watch Buffy?
No.
I'm just going to say, Angel and Drusilla.
Well, that's what I said. It's a...
He said it's just like any other vampire story.
No, I thought you said it was something new.
No.
Okay, good, because...
No. But, so, yeah, you know, it's... The plot is nothing novel, but just, you know, the way it's written, the art, it's just... As a package, it's wonderful, and I'm enjoying it in spite of the fact that, you know, I don't like vampires, and I've read this story before. It still has me sucked in.
I don't think we have read it. I think it's too early to tell. I think it's setting us up to think we've read it.
Right, and I, you know, I'm sure...
Yeah, Forge came out today. I haven't read it yet. But.
And I, you know, there's certainly room for that, but just... From the issues, you
know.
So
far, yeah, you definitely feel like, all right, been there, done that, but the writing's good enough, and there's enough interesting
it's something,
lore things.
And it's something specifically about that character. He writes, Josh Fialkov writes the main character in such a way that you feel for him. It's like, he's done this to himself, he's in this horrible position, but somehow I find myself rooting for him and hoping that I care about the character, which is, you know...
Hard with a random vampire book.
Yeah.
Who didn't go?
Sissy?
I didn't go, but mine's unoriginal. If you listen to my favorite issue or favorite title...
Four.
It's Animal Man.
Yeah. Oh.
Wait, it's not Tanneris?
Tanneris.
Not a lot of Marvel love here. Just overall. Everybody go?
Yes.
Yep. Okay. Favorite new writer.
Can anybody
and,
just say, if it's Scott Snyder, just raise your hand.
That's part of my new, not favorite writer, but favorite new, somebody right, new so that yeah. you've been introduced to this year. So, you know, now, Snyder. Last year, because Snyder was for me with the first, 2 years ago
year.
With the first American Vampire. Vampire. So, okay, Snyder, fine. Hack, whatever.
So I've got, who?
Snyder's a hack.
Oh, so I've got a problem here. There's two that I really like that I can't.
Can that's fine. You can, no, you can do
you
two because I
can have
you can go two.
All right. So first, I'm gonna say is Josh Fialkov. Nobody's gonna be fair surprised enough. There. Yeah. I mean, Last of the Greats, iVampire, Superman, Batman, Echoes. He's just done a lot of stuff this year, and the best part is he hasn't signed an exclusive anywhere. My second one, and this is Kyle Higgins. A lot of people don't realize this, but Gates of Gotham was scripted by Scott
Snyder. What else is Higgins doing right now?
Nightwing.
Nightwing and
Deathstroke.
Very
good. That's a good book. Thanks for stealing my guy.
So Kyle Higgins has got three good things, you know, he's done this year, and he's new to me. I won't say he's new.
Fair enough.
He's new to me.
Yep.
that's actually Kyle Higgins is who I was going to pick, just because I thought you were going to pick Josh Fialkov. But
yeah,
since
you
took them both.
So, well, I'm going to – no, I'll let Sean go first. I might steal Sean's.
Which Sean? I'm going to steal mine.
Okay.
Kieran Gillen.
Okay.
Good choice.
Journey in the Mystery is just an incredible book. His voice for the new Loki is great. His past, his fill-in issues of Thor between Straczynski and Fraction taking over were better than either of those two combined.
You know what I have to say, and I like Kieran Gillen because he does one thing very well. He cleans up Matt Fraction's messes. It's like Matt Fraction came in and screwed up Uncanny. He fixed it.
Yeah.
Came in and screwed up Thor. He fixed it.
Is he taking over Iron Man?
Yeah. And
I actually, Matt Fraction, the only book he writes that I like is Iron Man.
The last one I didn't mind.
He comes in and fills in for these guys. And his issues are better than these big name writers.
Yeah.
And I think he's up and coming. I think he will be an architect. Yeah. You know, a Marvel architect, quoted.
I believe so.
At some point.
At least an engineer.
Like the villain? Okay.
Okay. Well, I'm going to jump because I thought I had Sean's. This is Colin. I'm picking Jeff Lemire. Over the last year. Now, I had read his The Essex County, which destroyed me. I still haven't finished it because I can't. Still not emotionally ready to read number three. It wasn't his Superboy that I liked, but it was his the Flashpoint Frankenstein that I really liked. Then, so I was excited to read his new Frankenstein, and the Animal Man caught me completely off guard.
And Sweet Tooth is great.
You know, I haven't read Sweet Tooth, and I just got the first volume back in, and I know I need to. But just, yeah, between the Frankenstein and the Animal Man, I'm like, this guy is really... You know, I'm really enjoying his work.
Second year. I know you haven't finished it, but I have finished Essex County, and it is... it's amazing.
Number two left me a mess to running down my face, so... Adam.
I don't really have a...
Okay, we'll move on.
...writer. I can mention a favorite writer, but then I'm kissing up.
So. I would say Dan Slott. I mean, he's really... Yeah. He's been around a while, but he really... came out this year, I think. I mean, he did...
You don't get three?
I was going to say Dan Slott, but I kept thinking about it that I've been reading Dan Slott since he started redoing Spider-Man.
But
he
did Mighty Avengers, and he did Avengers Initiative, but I don't... They were okay, but I think...
Dan Slott jumps for me. Like, sometimes he is, and then sometimes it's just not that good, and then sometimes it's just great.
In my opinion, Big Time saved Amazing Spider-Man as a friend, as a book.
I don't know if Big Time did necessarily. I mean, Brand New Day?
Well, One More Day. No, that was the first one.
Yeah, Brand New Day's after One More Day or whatever. But that's what restarted all this stuff. And I don't know. I just always kind of liked it. Also, with Dark Reign was happening at the same time and all these characters they were introducing into the Spider-Man universe, like Mr. Negative and stuff like that, you know, Anti-Venom, which hasn't been that great. But it's fresh stuff. So,
have you read his Arkham?
I got into Dan Slott with his Ren and Stimpy in the mid-90s. How about that?
Okay, who do you got, Nick?
Seriously?
Yes.
It's Snyder, but I mean, have we said that enough?
Yeah, that's fine.
I have a second.
Okay.
And again, this is a writer that came on a book in 2009, but didn't really get bigger or whatever until a little bit later. And that's Brian Q. Miller.
Okay, good choice.
That book was just amazing, and I don't know why I had low expectations, but. I was just, you know, as each issue came out, I was just impressed with how fleshed out that character was.
Cool. Yeah, it's funny. That one, it slowly was going up at the end, and I've probably heard the most people bemoaning its loss of any of the canceled or the continued.
And I think low DC expectations books. Came from Spoiler as Batgirl.
Yeah.
Yes.
Right.
Stephanie Brown.
And he managed to take that character and make her his own. Yeah. Like, really made you care about Stephanie Brown as a character.
You got anybody, Sean? Sean and Left
yes,
Coast?
Yeah, I do. And this one just kind of, it was funny because I didn't have one up until last week as far as write, like new writers. Because I've been reading the tried and true stuff. But if we want to say new, for me, I guess I'm going to have to say Sam Humphries right now. I just finished Sacrifice, number one. And when I was at the Isotope picking that issue up, James went ahead and put Our Love is Real in my hand. So I ended up reading both of those books. And for me, I thought they were both really well-crafted stories. I liked the one and done. And Our Love is Real, and I think Sacrifice is going to be a really interesting book to follow. So for me, he was, like I said, I've never heard of him before. I don't know what he's done before, but I'm looking forward to the next issue of Sacrifice, and I think, if I'm not mistaken, he might be doing one of the John Carter books coming up, maybe.
Okay.
Keeping in mind our all-ages tag, Sean, what did you think of Our Love is Real?
Oh, I think we got a really bad connection.
I think you're getting arrested.
Oh, is that me?
Yeah. We don't have any fire.
It's not us.
We don't have any sirens here.
Isn't
it? Okay, let me go.
I'll put her back on mute.
Okay. Let me go back. Let me get on to the guys that emailed in. Now, I forgot. Favorite new character, Jim Beck, had Prince of Orphans.
Yeah. He's in Secret Avengers.
Secret Avengers.
Oh, okay.
He came out of the Iron Fist.
Yeah, okay. Fair enough. Thanks, as I had a very confused look on my face. And his favorite new writer is also Jeff Lemire. I didn't look at that first.
He wants to come on now.
Too bad.
And then...
call me. Okay. Ready?
Yeah.
Well, who was Ryan's real quick? While
video or voice?
And Ryan's favorite character...
Video or voice?
New character is Aquaman, and his favorite new writer, Scott Snyder.
Speaking of,
we might be having a guest call in here, which could be pretty darn cool.
He's been trying
to get this is Jeremy.
Many people...
Hey, everybody.
Scott.
Hey. Okay, our special guest calling in is someone we've been talking about a lot tonight, is Scott Snyder. And my name's Colin McMahon. I'm the owner of Pittsburgh Comics, and I just want to say thanks for calling in.
No, thanks so much for having me, man. I appreciate it, all the support you guys have been throwing our way.
Well, we've been doing our best of, end of the year best of list tonight, and your name is coming up pretty much on every category. whether it's Batman related, Gates of Gotham, American Vampire, Swamp Thing. We've hit pretty much everything you've done.
Thanks so much. I appreciate it.
Thanks for the great work. I mean, it's just, it's been a lot of fun reading books lately.
Thanks. It's funny because I felt like these first issues, DC would kill me for saying, but I mean, I really feel like these first four issues of both Swamp Thing and Batman, I'm really proud of them, you know, but this was sort of like, if we can make it past these first four issues, that's where all the fun starts. So, I mean, I'm not trying to get it. I'm really excited about where it's going with 5 and 6 and 7. Both.
The fun started page one. Are you kidding me?
Thanks, man. What did you see 5? I mean, I'm telling you, Batman 5 is like one of my favorite things I've ever written. So let me know what you think.
Well, that's cool. We like that it didn't feel to us like, I mean, I guess it did feel new, but at the same time, it was just a continuation of what started on Detective. And so, you know, we were just like, Detective was just sort of the ramp up. Yeah, at least
there's a very smooth transition.
Yeah.
Thanks. I mean, I feel like I'm trying to just keep the things that excite me about Batman and the whole mythology sort of front and center, you know, and try and ignore. I mean, because I signed up to do Batman from Detective way before there was a 52, so all of this stuff really was so scary and intimidating taking it on, you know, with all these new readers and it being number one, so. The only way to do it is to try and pretend you're doing like fan fiction or something and basically just write, you know, with the things that really interest you. So for me, it's the same issues about Gotham and its history and its sort of antagonistic relationship and sort of strange symbiotic relationship to Bruce and the Bat family.
Yeah, that was one of the things that we brought up, was the fact that you've written Gotham almost as a character in the book that really...
Yeah, I was going to say it's probably the best character revamp of the year is the character of Gotham. I mean, this is a character that, you know, nobody they use the architecture and as the artist and say, well, that's how I'm doing Gotham. But I don't think anyone really fleshes it out as a real person since, and like we said earlier, the James Robertson Opal City.
Yeah, that's one of my favorite stories of all time. So I'm such a huge fan of Starman and everything and what he did with Opal City. So yeah, that's thanks for even being in the same sentence. Really means a lot.
Good job, Nick.
This is Sean from San Francisco. I wanted to ask if there was going to be any kind of follow up to Gotham Knights as a standalone series, or was that just a leaping off point and you're going to follow those threads?
Yeah, I think it means Gates of Gotham.
Yeah, Gates of Gotham. There is going to be a follow up with Gates. It's I can't say much about it, but
no,
I'm very excited. I'm not sure that I don't know how much involvement I'll have necessarily with it, but it's a story that I've seen what the story is, and I think it's terrific. And in terms of the follow up in Batman, I mean, you'll see a lot of things that were in Gates of Gotham coming into play in Batman now. I mean, the end of issue 4 really left Batman at the mercy of the court, and the way that the court is about to torture him isn't to sort of, you know, put him in some crazy device or anything, but to just sort of show him how long they've been there. It won't be boring.
So good.
You know, they just show him, you know, old files or dusty things in a museum. I mean, they will torture him pretty bad. Like, it's sort of like the cult almost, this coming part. But the references I sent to Greg Capullo to draw it were like Jacob's Ladder, you know, Mary's Baby,
wow.
The Shining, all this stuff. So it's pretty straight up horror. But the idea is that they're trying to show him that the city doesn't belong to him and never has, and that he's just one lonely bat, you know, in a city that's full of birds and always has been. So in that way, a lot of the stuff that was in Gates in terms of the characters like Alan Wayne and Cameron Cain and other characters from the past, you'll see them kind of brought to bear in terms of what happened to them in the long history that Gotham has in relation to the bat and to the owl, sort of brought to, against Bruce in a terrible way where he realizes how unimportant he is, according to them. You know, how unimportant and alone the Wayne family has been historically. So there are a lot of things thematically, I think, that kind of come out of Gates for this.
Hey, Scott, this is Jeremy. I had a quick question for you, kind of relating your stuff with Batman to Detective. I thought it was really cool in Detective, you know, writing Dick Grayson, because he's actually always been one of my favorite characters, a little more than Bruce. And I know a lot of people, you know, we've talked a lot in this podcast, your Detective issues, you know, even though they're new and fresh, like, I put those honestly on the level of Frank Miller Dark Knight Returns. As one of, like, honestly, as one of the best Batman stories I've ever written, and yet it's Dick, not Bruce. Yeah. And that just, every time I think about that, it kind of blows my mind. And I was just curious, you know, are you preferring one over the other, or do you treat Batman as like a third character?
Well, they're so different that there's sort of joys and hardships to each one, where the fun of writing Dick Grayson and the fun of that story, I mean, for me, I guess the only way to approach the story to begin with is to try and figure out what you love about that character most. And for me, Dick Grayson has always been a favorite character, you know, back to when I was a kid, from Robin through Nightwing, everything. I mean, through, you know, through through everything that happened with No Man's Land, when he takes on the cowl, to now. I mean, so my favorite thing about him, though, is how compassionate and empathetic and, you know, and emotionally vulnerable, how human he is, how he doesn't carry the same baggage as Bruce because of what happened to his parents, that he does it out of a sense almost of doing the right thing or altruism or some kind of, you know, duty to the city. Or just doing the right thing, yeah. Again, and a sense of helping his fellow man. And so, in that way, you try and figure out that, you know, what it is you love about a character most, and then you just try and attack that, I guess, in a story. So for me, it was Gotham has always been this place that generates these terrible nightmares for Bruce, where his villains are almost like these kind of reflections of himself. So with Dick, it felt like, well, why don't we do the same thing? So it became about showing how the city was, how cruel it could be in terms of its citizens in that first arc, and then in terms of its criminals in the second, and then in terms of the big villain in James Jr. in the final one. So with Batman now, with Bruce, I mean, it's equally fun because it's all about figuring out, he's almost like writing an unreliable narrator where Dick is like so emotionally vulnerable and open all the time. He'll tell you what he's going through. It's almost like you being in the cowl, you know,
right.
Whereas Bruce is just, does not tell you anything.
Yeah.
He's really is almost pathological when you're writing him, and you're thinking to yourself, like, why don't you tell people how you're feeling? Like, why don't you say, I'm scared? He never does. It's always like Alfred or Dick or someone who has to be like, are you sure you're okay, Master Bruce? I'm fine. But that's the indicator, is that kind of refractive way of getting at it. So it's huge fun, and figuring out, for me, I mean, the same thing. It's Gotham is going to throw its worst stuff at Bruce, and for me, that's about his confidence. It's sort of the things that scare Dick and Detective wouldn't scare Bruce, you know, that they're different things. And the things that scare Bruce wouldn't really matter to Dick. So they're huge joys, yeah, and things that are tough about each character. But, I mean, I miss writing Dick. I'd love to go back and write Nightwing at some point or write him again. But I'm having a blast writing Bruce. I mean, there's no favorite.
Yeah,
no favorite.
Who wouldn't? Yeah, I'm going to pass on this book. So just change things up a little bit. I'm a big Swamp Thing fan from a long time back and haven't enjoyed the last couple series. And when this was announced, at first I was, oh, Swamp Thing, okay. And then I saw your name on it, and I went, wow. What brought you to Swamp Thing? What made you want to write Swamp Thing?
Well, I mean, Swamp Thing is one of my absolute favorite characters of all time. I was just joking around. I've been on the phone most of the day today with Jeff Lemire planning this big crossover we're doing next year, the Dead World crossover.
Awesome.
So we had it pretty planned out. This is working out the particulars, and tomorrow we're doing, we planned it on the calendar. Today and tomorrow are our big days, like our little conference of two, to figure this whole thing out in terms of the page by page kind of breakdown stuff. So we're super excited about it. I mean, he's like one of my best friends. So
cool.
With Swamp Thing, I mean, I've always been a huge fan. I was kidding around with him today about, you know, how much of a fan I was back when I was a kid. When I started at Vertigo, I was always talking about Swamp Thing, and are they going to bring him back, and what are they going to do? And Karen Berger actually gave me a little Swamp Thing I have right here. If we do video, I'll show you.
Okay.
But so I guess the idea is that DC was aware that I loved the character.
Okay.
And then when they were doing Brightest Day, Geoff Johns actually called me up, and I didn't know him very well. I mean, we're friendly now. I mean, I'm much more, you know, I'm much closer to him, but at that time I was very intimidated. He called me up at home. It was like dinner time. I was like cooking dinner with my kids and my wife, and he was like, oh, it's Geoff Johns. Like, oh my god.
Oh,
we, you know,
what did I do,
honey? He's like, listen, we're thinking about bringing back Swamp Thing, or we are bringing it back in Brightest Day, and I heard you're a fan of the character, and what do you think you'd do with him if we had a series? And I was like, oh my god, I have to pitch Swamp Thing? I'm like, so nervous. But I pitched really what I'm doing, pretty much exactly where I was saying, to me, the thing that I've always loved the most about Swamp Thing is his humanity, and the idea of him, how it's always been about a man wrestling with internal monsters, or even if he was never a man. So that my favorite stuff in the Len Wein was always this notion that he longs to be human again and thinks he can become human, no matter what the monsters are, and the Unmen and Arcane and all that fun stuff. That's the emotional core. And then in the Moor, even though he finds out he never was Alec Holland, he's unable to let go of that part of himself, and that's why he's always in love with Abby, and that's why he does the right thing. He doesn't become that kind of monstrous, you know, elemental force that he could be, you know, where he's just fighting for the green and taking down everything else in the world. So I was like, that's what I want to do, and I'd really like to bring him back human, if you can help me set it up, but I don't want to reboot it. I really want it to be that everything, you know, happened. I don't want to be Alan Moore light, you know, and just retread all of the same stuff.
Right. That was the most fascinating thing
about it.
Reading, seeing how you incorporated all of that. I was worried it was going to, when I saw it was going to be Alec Holland, you were going to dismiss all of Moore's run, but when you incorporated all of that, I was just like, wow.
Yeah, I was really nervous. It's so funny. I mean, because for me, I mean, I really underestimated the readership of the 52. I'll be the first to admit it. I mean, a lot of us did. All of us did. DC did too. I mean, I think, honestly, I mean, if you think about how many of the books sold out the first round, I mean, they pay all of us royalties on the books that sell out. And you can just imagine, like, nobody would want to pay all those writers. Just to give you an indicator of how none of us knew it would do as well as it did. But the feeling with that was, you know, I went into that and Batman thinking there's not really going to be that many new fans. You know, it'll just be fans that have lapsed or that love the character. But, you know, there hasn't been a Swamp Thing in a while. So my concern in those early issues, those first two, was really to try and establish for fans that were returning what was still there, which was everything, really, and, you know, how we were going to handle the mythology. And then as soon as I started getting emails from people and they were like, well, when, I thought Swamp Thing, you know, when do they hit a remote button and he comes out of the swamp and, like, fights a giant monster? I'm like, well, he never really has a remote attached to him. You know, it'll be like, in Batman, somebody wrote being like, I didn't know he had a live dinosaur in his cave. That's awesome. I was just like, God, there really are new readers.
Yeah.
You know, and so I tried to quickly move away from it. I mean, I look back at those first issues and there's so much about exposition and just trying to explain what we're going to use and what we're not, that I'm excited to be past them and to be past these last issues where it really becomes a lot more propulsive and sort of all the stuff that we've set up now starts to really come true in issue 5 and 6 and 7.
Yeah, I'm really enjoying the Animal Man and the Swamp Thing. And when I remember seeing you guys tweeting, you and Jeff tweeting back and forth and going, wait, are they actually going to meet up? This is fantastic.
Yeah, they are. They're going to meet up really, I mean, they're going to meet up soon. You saw Alec mentioned in issue 4 of Animal Man. And they'll meet up soon, but they're going to have a proper crossover in our second year. So we're really, really excited about it. I mean, I can't, again, I'm so tempted to just be like, oh, it's about this and this.
No, don't give anything away.
I mean, you know, it's tight. If you think about the title and all that, I'll leave it up to you. But it's going to be a lot of fun. We're both really, really thrilled about it. And it's going to bring back from Swamp Thing mythology, you'll see some real favorite characters that I've been dying to get to. And
cool.
With Animal Man. And, you know, it'll be a lot of fun.
Yeah, I just loved when I saw the first guy turn his head around. I'm like, no way. You know, I don't know how you pronounce that, but...
I know.
Yeah, Ivunch or something,
either,
yeah.
I love that thing that kills the nun.
Yes, yeah, that was just... wow.
Yeah, and the Flash, actually, if you remember Matt Cable, when Cable turns into... when he reveals himself as Arcane, he has flies coming all out of him and stuff and in him, so that was part of that as well. So I try and make little references to the crows and all that, you know, but... but we're trying to do our own thing. I mean, and now seeing how many new readers there are... just in general, I mean, how many people are... the biggest thrill is to hear people say, oh, I like what you're doing, I'm going to go back and read Alan Moore. And to be able to introduce people to one of your favorite characters and have them go back and read stories that inspired you that, you know, are, you know, 1,000 times better than what you could do is really a thrill.
Yeah, you should be getting commissions on all that I'm selling now. It's crazy.
All five of the hardcovers.
Yeah, I should find Alan Moore and just tell him that.
Yeah. Oh, okay, yeah. We'll get him. We'll have him on next week.
You know what's really funny is there's a guy whose his handle is Angry Alan Moore on Twitter, and he's always tweeting at me. It's really funny. And he speaks in this, like, Cockney accent. You know, if he spells it all like that, he's like, that bloody Snyder ruining everything I did on Swamp Thing.
That sounds like him.
Yeah.
No, it's Evil Wizard.
Hey, Scott, you said everyone was surprised, or a lot of people were surprised with the number of sellouts, and for the guys sitting around talking tonight, I mean, we watched and waited for what we could see on our side from sales figures from Diamond and talking to Colin how the books were selling through. But can you tell us what it was like to be on the other side? So were you guys calling each other up when the numbers came in?
I mean, me and we're really close in the bat world. I mean, Jeff Lemire, we've been friends since we both started, I mean, since I started getting into comics and from before, you know, when I was more into prose. And I talked to him all the time and we were both on the phone right and left, you know, being like, I can't believe this is going so well. But, you know, all in the Bat family as well. I mean, everybody, what was mostly exciting was that they put a lot of pressure on us to really think of it as something like, if you had your chance to introduce your favorite character however you want, meaning if you want to change continuity or not, to a new readership and to an old readership, you know, but this is your number one, what would it be? And there was such an excitement and also, I mean, a fear among all of us, but mostly an excitement to be like, I get to introduce my favorite characters to people, even if they know these characters. It's like getting to do your favorite version of them. That we were all really excited to see how things went because we had invested a lot in him. Like, I can speak for, you know, Gail Simone and Pete Tomasi and all of us in the Bat world, like, went back and forth trading our scripts for the first time, really, and trying to make him as good as possible. So it was a great feeling. I mean, it really was. You know, I mean, there's always, you know, all of us, we all have our issues with our own stuff, each other's stuff, and with editorial. And, you know, it's an office a lot of the time, you know. But this was a moment for all of us, I think, where we really invigorated all of us to be like, you know, this is something we'll remember for as long as we ever do this.
Cool. Now, is there a lot of back and forth? Because, like, I see, like, you know, there's Nightwing's and Batgirl's and Nightwing, and a lot of, we were just talking about how a lot of the Bat books are meshing where you don't necessarily have to read them all to understand the story, but they all are working together. Is there communication amongst all the writers just about what you're doing or just general themes?
Yeah, there's a lot. There's a lot. I mean, for us in the Bat world especially, there are things that are going to happen in Batman pretty soon in my story that are going to impact other characters, and there are things that are going to happen in Nightwing that are going to echo out through Batman, and so it's not really, none of them will be things that you have to buy this book to buy that book. They're not doing those kinds of crossovers right now, and I'm very happy they're not, just because I think each book should be able to be really independent this year and stuff, and I think it's a great decision. But there will be things where if you read all of them, it'll be fun for you to see the overlap, and you will have crossovers in a lot of ways through different books coming up, but like that, where you can read either one and don't need to read them both necessarily. But if you read them all, you'll get one big picture too. So yeah, there's a lot of communication. We do trade a lot. I mean, I'm assuming it's the same way in a lot of other pockets of the DCU, but I can honestly say that we're planning some fun stuff between the books and that in the Bat world, between Detective, Batman and Robin, Nightwing, all those stuff, Batgirl.
Cool.
Yeah, very cool.
Yeah, it's going to be a good year, I promise.
Well, it's been a really good year so far, so yeah, no complaints.
No, I mean it. I take me at my word, I mean it. Like, I'm going to call you guys back up, and I want to know, and like, let's say in like February or March, sure, I'll call you and be like, so was I telling the truth? Because I really feel that way deep down. I'm like dying to get to the upcoming issues in my book, but also in the other books too, because I know what's coming. And Nightwing and Animal Man and Wonder Woman and stuff, and I feel like a lot of us were kind of, you know, just setting the stage for what's going to happen coming up.
Cool. Scott, this is Adam. I noticed, I think it was on your Twitter, I think you tweeted something about how you were putting in like almost like symbols of owls and stuff throughout a lot of the books, or not just you, but other people in many different books, even before the new Tip 52. Is that correct?
Yeah. There's some in Detective and there's some in Gates. So there's not that many. So you don't need to call through and think you're going to find one handful. But there are a handful. You'll see some are obvious. Like at the end of Detective, there's an owl flying by the Batwing in Francesco's pages of 881. And then there are other ones like in Gates, there's, and in Batman number one, there's Cameron Kane has an owl pin on his tie, and there's also an owl statue in the background. So there are things like that, that it's a story I've been thinking about for a while, and, you know, I wanted to try and give it some gravity and make you feel like the owls have really been there for a while, even just physically in the architecture.
Yeah, I love it when people do that in books, though. They give me something to look for.
Thanks. Well, there's going to be a lot of stuff. I'm excited. There's stuff in issue one of Batman that's going to come back after this court story, too. So, you know, and things like that we've been setting up. So we're trying to think really big. I mean, that was part of the fun thing about the New 52 initiative, that one of the reasons that I've been so close, I think, with Jeff Lemire since the beginning, is we both try and we like doing those big, long-form stories. But, you know, that kind of stuff's happening all over the DCU right now, so it's a fun time to be there because you can plan with other guys and say, you know, well, this story is going to end at issue 11. Like, the stuff I'm planning with Jeff for this Dead World stuff doesn't begin until the end of this year, you know, so it's a ways away, but, you know, you start planning it now and you can put seeds in there so you see it coming. You know, it's a lot of fun.
Scott, this is Justin. I introduced myself realizing you have no idea who I am. but my question to you, you kind of just started to answer it, is how long in advance do you plan a story? You said you were introducing owls for Batman, and, I mean, we're four issues into the New 52, so how long prior to the New 52 did they tell you that they were going to do this and you had to plan it out? You said you had an owl in Gates of Gotham, and you know, that was 5 months prior to the New 52, so now we're back 9 months ago. I mean, how long does it really take you to plan a story like this with all these layers?
Well, it's different. It's different for everybody. There's no mandatory thing. I mean, you have to send in outlines that show your upcoming issues to, I mean, everybody's, you know, issues 8 and 9 are due around this time. So everybody plans a good, you know, 4 or 5 months ahead. And that way, or writes, you know, 4 months ahead, because those things are being drawn. Like, Greg Capullo is done, he's finishing, or he's midway, I think, through issue 7 right now for us. So you know, that's how we keep on schedule in that way. But in terms of planning the story, I mean, my way is really to try and figure out what it's about for me. I mean, that's where it begins always. Like, it's about Bruce being challenged here by Gotham in a way where it's trying to really make him see that the city isn't his, never was his. And in fact, like, the stuff that's coming in the big revelations, you know, in the coming issues, is that it's actually, they're going to sort of show him the ways that they've almost shaped the destiny of his family and also the families of other people around him in some ways that he didn't realize, to make him, you know, just to show how insignificant he is in some way. But once I know that, and I start to plan it out in the big strokes, and I figure out where it's going and what it's gonna, how it's gonna end, is really important to me. Then I just sort of begin to break it down and do issue by issue. But it's usually about, I would say it's about, once I hit about issue 5, like, so I'm over the hump of the story writing it, I start to think about what's coming afterwards. So for me right now, I have planned, there's, after this, there's gonna be, this ends at issue 11. Then there's going to be a sort of, you know, a rest for an issue. Because it's a big, where it's going is pretty giant, the owl story. And then the next one is going to be 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, another 5 issues. So the next story will be a 5-issue story that's going to be really, really fun and twisted as well. So I don't want to give anything away with that, but it'll be, it's going to be a lot of fun. I've been doing research. I've been saying, you know, on Twitter and stuff too, but it's going to be good. And it's, that's planned out really issue by issue at this point. So I try and do that, I guess, is as far as I have it planned out. I know what I want to do with the, if I don't get fired from Batman.
That's going to happen soon.
I have stories that I'd love to do with Two-Face, and I have one, you know, another one I'd really love to do, another one about Gordon. And so, but the actual hard planning is really done through about 18. So I would say about a year and a half, almost. That's where I am. And the same on Swamp Thing, meaning, and the same on American Vampire, really. So those issues, American Vampire is written through issue 27 and planned through the next big arc of the 50s. So yeah, that takes us up through about 33, 34, 35.
Okay. I mean, is there an end point for American Vampire? Do you have planned out, or is it just something that's going to keep going for as long as you can?
No, there's definitely an end. It's okay. In the outline, too, of how it's going to end, and it will come up to present day. But
oh, cool.
Yeah, so I know how it's going to end, and I know which characters are involved, and, you know, where it's headed in that regard, and how it involves, you know, things with the House of Book and the House of Skinner and all that stuff. But it's mostly just, the thing that's been exciting has been being able to find little stories that really excite me and Raphael on the side. So it's taking longer to get to that ending, I guess, than I had thought. I originally thought maybe we'd try and shoot for 50 issues, like 50 states, and have it be fun. But we're definitely going to go past that at this point. Great. So maybe now I'm kind of thinking maybe 76.
That's fine. Because for me, it's nice because it's one of the real steadier sellers, which is always good. Just, you know, on the risk aspect of ordering books, it's nice to have something that's steady. But the hardcovers and the paperbacks sell fantastically.
Thanks. Yeah, I'm really excited about how it was received. That was.
Yeah.
I should hop off in a second. Cause I'm,
oh, that's fine.
But my I'm really excited about it because I was so terrified having Stephen King on there. I mean, yeah. I thought I had basically blown my foot off of the bazooka when I got on there. I was like so excited that he was on there because, you know, he wasn't supposed to be at all. I had sold the series and they knew that I knew him from the book world and I was supposed to just ask him for a blurb. So I did. And then he was like, you know, I really like this outline enough that I would be willing to write an issue sometime. And I'm like, well, if I tell them that, they're going to say they want you to write issue number one. And he was like, no, they probably won't want me to because I've never written a comic. And he's like, no, they won't want you to. And then I told them, and then he wound up, he was only going to write a few pages. He's going to write one issue that I outlined for him, and then we were going to put a few pages in each issue of my first five. And he just expanded it and expanded it and expanded it, and I'm so glad he did because I love what he did. But I was so excited. I'm like, oh my god, we got Stephen King's first original comic. It's gonna, people are gonna really come see what it is. Then I was like, oh my god, we got Stephen King doing his first original comic, and it's my first. And I'm gonna suck. Someone's gonna read it. It's gonna tank. It's gonna be awful. What am I thinking? So it was a super stressful time, but I'm so grateful to everyone reading us. I mean, I love nothing more than doing the DCU stuff. It's so much fun, but American Vampire is also, you know, our baby. It's just a world that we're creating ourselves, so it means a tremendous amount to me that DC has been so supportive, and there's going to actually be ads for American Vampire in Batman 5. They're actually, for the first time, they're starting to break down the walls between Vertigo and DC, which is exciting for us. So you'll see ads for Spaceman, and which I love, and Sweet Tooth, and everything in the DCU books, and vice versa. So it'll be cool.
Hey, Scott, I know you said your time is coming up short. Just one last question, kind of. We're doing our, you know, end of the year best of list that everyone does this time of year, and you know, we told you are on, I think, all of our lists in multiple forms. But I was actually just curious, you know, what are some of the things that are on your list? You know, you influence us, but, like, what stuff, you know, wows you month in and month out that we should all be checking out?
Yeah, well, I mean, the things obviously, if I'm going to name the big stuff, I mean... Animal Man is my favorite book on the stands. But in the DCU stuff, obviously, I have tremendous fun reading Justice League. I think Wonder Woman is one of the best books out there. It's so dark and interesting. Aquaman's a ton of fun. And, you know, I say all the time on Twitter, all that stuff, which DCU books I love. And across the aisle of the Evil Empire, I love what they're doing with Daredevil, Wolverine. Mark Waid is just amazing to me, and he's one of the nicest guys in the world. I totally geeked out when I met him in Baltimore. I was just saying that I saw him sitting with his girlfriend, and I was like, that's Mark Waid. And he was at this little coffee area at the hotel, and I was like, listen, I'm a total nerd, I'm a total geek out, I just want you to know what a big fan I've been of your stuff all the way back, Pottersfield, everything, you know. So, but he's amazing, and what he's doing with Daredevil is incredible. And the smaller stuff, the stuff I'd love to plug. I mean, I love Colin Bunn's Six Gun from Go. I loved it from issue one. I think it's incredible. Who's Jake Ellis? It's been amazing. I really liked Josh Fialkoff's Echoes. I thought that was terrific. Yeah. I mean, I like him on iVampire a ton as well. But what else? I mean, things that I thought were great that I read this year were Day Trippers. I thought was one of the best comics I've ever read.
Yeah.
By Fabio Moon, Gabriel Ba. Let me think. I know that there's stuff I'm not thinking of that I want to plug because it doesn't get as much attention. What are some of the things that are off the beaten path that you guys have really liked?
Blue Estate has come up quite a bit from Image. I don't know if you've heard of that.
I haven't read it yet. I've heard such good things about it, but I have not read it.
Yeah, it's a great story if you like, you know, an L.A. crime noir. It's got movie stars, drugs, real estate scams, femme fatales, P.I., you know, all woven in this crazy tapestry. Really good stuff.
Sounds great. I mean, I've heard so many good things about it. Was it Justin Jordan, the strange talent of Luther Strode?
We talked about that.
That came up tonight.
Oh, really? That one is great. I love that one. And what else that's out there that... That's more, off the beaten path.
Pigs
stuff.
Was something I didn't get to yet.
Yeah, Pigs has been very good.
Oh, yeah, that's from Image. Heard really good things about that, too. Yeah, I haven't read that yet.
Last of the Greats, which I've heard is on hold until they see how sales are doing.
Uh-oh. Another Fialkov.
Plug that book.
That, I think he's a huge talent. I really like, I loved Tumor and Echoes both, so... You know, and he's a really fun guy to talk to at DC as well, so I would always root for him.
Cool. Yeah, and Batman's appearing in iVampire, so he better treat him nice.
I know, hope he doesn't turn him into a vampire.
Oh, well then.
Then I have to deal with that.
There you go. A new challenge.
No, I'd have to fight him off on that one.
There you go.
Let me think for a sec. I read Swallow Me Whole. That was really good. The top shelf book.
Yeah. Nate Powell.
Edmondson's new book was good. Activity. Just first issue came out last week.
Oh, yeah. I actually have it. I haven't read it yet. But we've been traveling for family stuff for Christmas.
What, the holidays? What? Really?
Wisconsin and then back here. So we haven't had much of a chance. I'm trying to catch up on a lot of stuff. But, send me an email, too, if you see anything that you really mm-hmm. love that's off the beaten path, because I would love to promote it and plug it and stuff like that, too, mm-hmm. And take a look, because, I don't know, I feel like it's so exciting to find something new, and I know that there are all these funny divisions between Marvel and DC and all that, but I love going on there and saying great stuff. I mean, some of my favorite writers work over there, too, like Jason Aaron. I think it's just amazing all the time, and... Mark Waid and some of the guys that are coming up, like Nick Spencer and Colin Bunn, are guys that I love, too. So, it'd be fun to be able to mention anything you think is good and you send my way, too. So,
great.
Yeah. You think like we do, so.
Yeah. We always try.
So I got to come visit your shop sometime.
Oh, man. Anytime. You'd be welcome. We will have a packed house for you, I promise.
You just right. missed yeah. about... 8 grown men suddenly like
what?
Next time we're down in Pittsburgh.
Awesome.
I'll see you next time. Yeah, next time we come through PA. I would love to do something like that. But
fantastic.
Thanks again, you guys. I really appreciate
it.
Thank you.
Yeah,
thank you.
Thanks for calling. This is great. You're our first guest. Thanks so much.
All right.
Sure. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Well, I don't think we can really continue on with this.
Save the bad stuff.
That was, yeah. We'll save the rest of this for next week. That was pretty darn cool.
I wanted when he said Stephen King was on the book, and you're so nervous it was going to start tanking afterwards. I want to say, what you should do is download this podcast as soon as we're done and listen to the plug that Joe F gave before you got on and we didn't know you were calling in about how it got better.
This was recording, right? Okay, good. Okay, well, I think we'll wrap up. It's a little late, and I don't think we can top that. So we'll finish up the last half of this next week. Wow.
Yeah.
Thanks, Scott.
Yeah, thanks.
Thanks,
Scott. Big
yeah,
thoughts.
Thank you,
thanks
Scott.
To Scott Snyder. That was awesome. Okay. It was all a dream. I used to read Wizard magazine. Marvel versus DC. I don't want to fight no more, y'all. Check this out right here. I was raised in a small southern community. People used to look at me different because I looked different. But the song ain't about race, it's about lines in the sand that we draw to keep on producing any hatred. And internet culture only took away the faces. But when we had to... Negativity and cynicism took the world over. I rode my bike and grabbed my backpack and hold it over my shoulder. And went down to the comic book store with a copy of Me Against the World bumping. I spent my $10 and learned to love the elements that made me feel so relevant. A niche, a place to feel something. And I grew up thinking one side was better. And I ignored tradition, thinking half the story could shepherd me through the gateways of seeing a world that lay beyond the racks that's fun at the front next to the register. And all I hear is Marvel versus DC. And all I see is a sea of people like me.
and all I feel is the hate in their voices, ignoring the choices life has given you and me. And all I hear is Marvel, this and DC back, and all I see is a sea of people at my back. If you're trying to stop with all the naysaying, then Adam Gold Rock is here to keep the tape playing. I made fun of the big guns, the breasts, the muscle bearing chests, absurd jackets and outfits, each saga and death, the funerals and the time spent with secrets comic creators kept. I was a zombie walking around in a daze. I was a fan with crises on the way. And I still remember back when mom and dad would fight. I'd read a comic and sketch to pass the day. I'm feeling better now, life is swelling now. And I see that I can love it for what these pages say. And sure, at times I'm frustrated, but great writing is dope. And sick ass art can be the saving grace. And that's whether it's Green Lantern or X-Men, Ghost Rider or Next Wave, the arrangement I look through. So that's why when I rap, I try to talk about the things that bring us together the way that comic books do. And all I hear is Marvel versus DC. And all I see is a sea of people like me. And all I feel is the hate in their voices, ignoring the choices life has given you and me. And all I hear is Marvel this and DC that. And all I see is a sea of people at my back. If you're trying to stop with all the naysaying, then Adam Warlock is here to keep the tape playing. That was a good drum break. Come on. There ain't a thing that I can do about this black hole. We're all swimming in a dead pool of lost souls. Got more to chew on, sort of like a mind bender. A brainiac on the mic, that's why I stopped going back to the store. Cause the fans were like the walking dead. Just banshees screaming off all their talking heads. It's like they saw Spider-Man, but like Batroc. Corporations raise the price of shutting out the have-nots. And you can call them the Illuminati New World Order. Made a Franken castle like I told you. So strange. Call a doctor. All doomed. Now they gotcha. Weak as Tony Stark when he's chilling out sober. I ain't no Casanova. I can't convince you. Mr. Sinister in your minds I can't get into. But if you wanna be a Superman, show me. Stop with all the pointless battles like Don Quixote.